You're listening to a podcast from the BBC World Service. This is Hard Talk with me, Stephen Sacker. Thanks for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Hard Talk on the BBC World Service. When my guest today joined the Russian government as a highly ambitious, bright, young technocrat back in 2002, he probably didn't envisage a career spent railing against Kremlin power and organising anti-Putin protests. But that's the way things have worked out for Vladimir Milov. His tenure as a deputy minister of energy didn't last long. Putin didn't like his plans for liberalising the state-dominated oil and gas sector, and Milov was forced out. He quickly joined other economically and politically liberal Russians in calling for wholesale reform of Russia's increasingly centralised and authoritarian system. In short, he joined the beleaguered band of activists ready to confront Vladimir Putin's Kremlin machine. But Russia's political opposition has made little headway. Leaders of the movement have been starved of media airtime, harassed, imprisoned, or, in the case of Boris Nemtsov, assassinated. President Putin has expertly maintained not just his power, but his popularity too, with approval ratings any Western leader would dream of. To many Russians, Putin's opponents look like little more than stooges of the hostile West. Could it be that democracy isn't a Russian priority? Well, Vladimir Milov joins me now. Welcome to Hard Talk.
Pleasure.
I just describe being an opposition leader in Russia as being a pretty thankless task. Do you approach it with a heavy heart?
You know, sometimes it creates a grim mood. My co-author, Boris Nemtsov, was murdered last year in Moscow. You obviously know that. We wrote books together. We fought side by side together. So it's difficult, but we got to continue that. Somebody has to do this.
Yeah, I've met Boris Nemtsov several times, went to his flat in Moscow once. He told me that he believed his phone was bugged. He believed that he was being followed at times. He clearly lived in a world that felt to him very insecure. Does your world feel insecure?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there have been many recent events which point out that we are under like 24/7 surveillance. So we basically live like an aquarium. There's been many audio tapes, mail leaks, video tapes published even recently against the opposition leaders. So you got used to that sort of living if you fight against Putin.
Yeah, I can understand why you might be prepared to accept the sacrifices that come with living in an aquarium, the constant surveillance, the constant tension, if you believed you were gaining some sort of traction, if you believed that you could make a difference. But frankly, if I look at Russia today, you're not making a difference.
This is because you need to go beyond the headlines. I represent a party and a coalition of parties which does work on the ground a lot, which have participated actively in regional and local elections in the past few years.
Yeah, well, let me stop you right there. Yes, you try, but if I look at the last regional elections last year, you fought one particular region northeast of Moscow as a sort of democratic opposition alliance. You didn't even cross the 5% threshold to get any seats in the regional assembly.
Depends on how you look at it. For an optimist, the glass is like 5% full. This is a region which is twice the size of the Netherlands and in terms of territory. And we were only given 20 days for campaigning there after all the litigations, because initially they tried to ban us, with almost zero ID recognition rate in the beginning of campaign. So we got 4% in the capital city. Yes, we did worse in the outback, but give us just a little more time. And there are plenty of other examples in big and medium-sized cities when we've done fairly well. This is actually one of the reasons the government is so anxious to point out compromat and leak it on video and harass us and do not let us talk to voters and so.
You're telling me that a 4% result in one particular region could be regarded as glass half full. I'm looking at percentages which are very different. I'm looking at Vladimir Putin's approval rating, which is between 70 and 80%. At one point last year, it reached 89%. Those are percentages that you just can't argue with.
Don't much impress me, because even the pollsters who publish these figures argue that only like 10, 15% percentage points of this 80-something are hardliner supporters, the great majority say that he's more or less, and they basically see no alternative. So they support him as an institutional phenomenon, as the Tsar, not as a person that they would like to govern Russia forever. And if you take a look at all other elements of the system, the government, the ruling party, the governors of the regions, their ratings are significantly down in the past months. And for most of those elements, negative ratings are higher than positive. So Putin is not the only one who is governing Russia.
Well, it is Putin's government. It's Putin's Kremlin. So if Putin is as popular as the polls suggest and anecdotal evidence would suggest across Russia, you have still got a very profound problem.
We do have a lot of problems, but the reality is different from these media headlines that suggest that Putin dominates all in Russian politics. He suffered crashing defeats in regional elections in the past years, basically third...
That's the point, though. He has at times looked more vulnerable. I'm thinking of perhaps late 2011, when there really were protest movements across Moscow and other cities, too.
And remember, I've spoken here in London a month before those elections when he suffered weak result.
And that's 5 years ago.
Everybody said to me exactly what you're saying right now, but Putin got it under control. But pollsters say that he's dominating, no chance that you would break through and show any results. I said at Chatham House on record here, believe me, in the month you'll see a lot of trouble.
We're talking about a moment 5 years ago when it seemed you were making some progress. 5 years on, you seem to have gone backwards. That's my point.
I don't think so. I think so. For the first time ever, a Russian opposition figure have shown, the Democratic figure got about a third votes in the Moscow mayoral election. 3 years ago, Alexei Navalny did that. Was the highest ever oppositional result in Moscow mayoral elections in all our history. And this is, I think, 600,000 votes in Moscow alone is enough foundation to count on getting affection in the parliament this September elections. So it's not as black and white as you portray. There is much more than meets the eye about Russian politics.
I want to talk about the economy at some length, but before I do that, I actually want to talk about nationalism. It seems to me that what Vladimir Putin has done at a time of great economic difficulty in Russia is successfully cloak himself in the garb of nationalism. And the Russian people, they buy into Putin as the defender of Russian national interest.
You know, it depends on how you look at it. Because if you watch Russian state media, they are not portraying Russia as an aggressive, conquering, imperialistic nation that is spreading out its nationalistic aspirations. We are portrayed as saviors. Ukraine is under attack by the Westerners. We need to save the brotherly nation from attack by aliens. This is what Russian media is saying. So I would say, yes, there is a percentage point of people who are infested with this imperialistic fever. I'd say it's most likely single digits, and majority of Russians are not aggressive and do not want to engage in all this
international exercise. I just wonder, you say that I am misreading what's happening inside Russia. I wonder whether you're misreading it, frankly. I mean, let's talk specifics. Let's talk Crimea. Are you suggesting to me that the annexation of Crimea was not a popular move?
It was a popular move, but because it was portrayed and painted as a priceless move. We will be able to get away with it and nothing will happen. This was the message, not the Crimea itself. If you even take an official polls published by Kremlin loyal pollsters, you'll see great numbers of people saying that if we are to pay a big price, so maybe we should rethink the whole issue.
But the danger for you as an opposition leader is that if you come out and say that you believe that the annexation of Crimea was wrong, it was unwise, it wasn't in Russia's long-term interest, you are immediately portrayed as a traitor. So let's be clear. Do you oppose and do you reject Russia's annexation of Crimea?
I reject annexation the way it was done.
Let's not mince words. Just tell me, yes or no, if you were in power in Russia today, you would hand Crimea back, would
look,
you?
Look, in a yes or no mode, I reject the annexation the way it was done. To hand back Crimea takes much more than just desire of one man. There is no man in Russia, no political position. We have no Tsar who can just handle it back. It takes a process. It takes understanding and approval of the society. Yes, I will undertake steps to bring international community in, engage a dialogue about the future of Crimea, which is rejected by Putin now. To hand it back, there is no position that would give me such powers.
Sounds to me like you're fudging it.
You want to have your cake and eat it. You want to oppose Putin's policy, but you're not prepared to tell the Russian people that they have no right to Crimea and it should go back to Ukraine.
If we are to talk about what I want and what I don't, what I wanted to do for all my life, and I suffered a lot, I wanted to do important political and economic reforms in Russia. I will never, ever let the Crimea question stand between me and important political economic reforms. If the Crimea issue is an obstacle, then we need to overcome it somehow. We need reforms first, and Crimea we'll discuss with the international community, we'll discuss with Ukraine. Do not try to put this as an obstacle between me and important reforms.
But the question is whether it's an obstacle between you and winning popular support in your own country.
It's not a problem.
Ukraine is one issue you've got to deal with. Let me just continue. The other big question you have to deal with regard to your own people, is sanctions. Sanctions which were imposed by the West, the United States and Europe, as a result of Russia's actions in Crimea and Ukraine. Do you support the West in its sanctions, or do you oppose them?
Let me put it this way. I understand why the West did it, because Russia have violated a lot of things. And I openly recognize it, and I think this violation was wrong. I never supported directly any sanctions against my country, but I understand why you do it. And I think Russia should undertake steps to restore trust of the international community.
Again, I just wonder whether that's going to satisfy the Russian people. Your economy is in big trouble. You had nearly 4% contraction last year. It's going to contract again this year. The IMF have calculated that if they look at all of the sanctions, particularly in finance and energy and defence, it's costing Russia about 1.5% of your national GDP per year. The Russian people aren't going to like you saying you understand why the West is imposing them and you understand that they have to do it.
Again, I think you misread some of the signals that come from Russia. Again, I'm referring to official polls which are published by pollsters quite loyal to Kremlin. There is a huge call, right? Two-thirds of Russians are calling for reconciliation with the West. Doesn't mean that they all of a sudden fell in love with the United States and Europe. But people who at the same time say they support Putin demand that Russian government undertake steps to normalize relations with the West.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, you speak fabulous English. I don't know whether you're educated partly in the United States, but you sound as though you've spent a lot of time in the West. I'm just thinking about ordinary Russian people who listen to you and say, as you have said many times, that, you know, we've got to get away from this sort of anti-Western bias that we have. Are you telling me that when Putin tells the Russian people that NATO has for years been humiliating Russia by moving forever eastward, challenging Russia's sphere of influence, are you telling me that Putin isn't striking a chord with the Russian people?
No, this is exactly what he's doing. He's been for many years trying to portray US and NATO as certain aggressive forces who are stepping their feet on the Russian national interest.
But my point is, it's working. With his own people, that message works.
It is working, but look, you are talking to a person who traveled like more than 60 Russian regions in the past few years, and weekly, I meet a lot of crowds of ordinary Russian voters and I talk to them. These questions get raised. Guess what I answer? I said, look, there are three major global centers of influence: the West, China, and Islamic world. Make your pick. After that, a moment of
silence.
Hang
on, what about Moscow? Putin's message is that Moscow should and can be one of the global centers of world power.
Look, Russians live in the real world. They've watched TV, but most of the time they live in the real world. They see this deteriorating roads, corrupt police, you know, worn out houses in the countryside. They understand better than anybody else that the TV reality is fine, lulling ourselves about our greatness is fine, but they know what Russia really is. So this thing, people just don't buy.
Let's just talk for a minute about ideology. When you go to these regions, do you try to persuade them that the Western idea of liberal democracy is what Russia needs?
No, I don't do that. You don't talk ideological concepts to Russian people. They just disconnect momentarily. But Russians...
Do you use the word democracy at all?
Yeah, I use it, but I use it in a very practical sense.
Well, that's what Vladimir Putin says.
No. Vladimir Putin does... He was in power for... He will be in power longer than Brezhnev was when his current term...
If you believe he serves till 2024,
Let's get back to democracy. One thing which Russians never accepted, at least two-thirds majority always rejected Putin's moves to abolish direct elections of regional governors, abolish direct elections of city mayors, heads of districts, and so on. He done that all over the country, but people never liked that. And they are ready to support people who want to restore that.
Here's a couple of things I noticed.
This is how Russians understand democracy.
Here's a couple of things I noticed about what was happening in Russia today. One, in a lot of towns and even villages across Russia, we see that old monuments to Stalin are being put back in the town centre. We see that new museums are being established which hail Stalin's contribution to Russian and Soviet history. You know, history books are being rewritten to glorify what happened during the Stalinist period and the Soviet period. It seems to me that your messages about, you know, we have to choose, it's either America or China or the Islamic world as a centre of power, they don't reflect how Russians feel today about their own past and the potential in their future to be powerful, as they were, and the Soviet Union.
Look, I take it all as a temporary, like a foam floating around. It will be washed away, inevitably, because, again, if you talk to ordinary people, again, maybe big numbers would say, we support Putin's foreign policy, we like Stalin. When you ask them, do you think that these issues are important? Stalin, foreign policy, Syria, Donbass, whatever, you would get a thin minority because people mostly care about other things. And here is where Putin's policy delivered a lot of failures.
Well, let's get to it then, because I know you've been dying to talk about the economy from the very beginning of this interview. How do you reach out to the millions of ordinary Russians who are struggling economically right now but do not appear to be responding or maybe even listening to your message? How do you reach them?
If we go down to one simple formula, it's demonopolization. Remember what happened in Britain in the 1970s, right? And what happened afterwards with Thatcher's reforms.
You're saying Russia needs a Margaret Thatcher.
What we're saying is that the word monopoly, when we talk about political sense, economic sense, media sense, people don't like the word monopoly. People see that what happened in the past 15 years, you got a shiny new building of a branch of Gazprom in a local district, you got a shiny new building of railways, of pension fund, and beyond that, just the same ruins as were there previously. They don't like the word monopolies. Monopolies force them to pay more and earn less. And we are, demonopolization is the concept which Russians understand. They love to hear more about it. We have a lot to say. I'm personally very experienced.
But isn't that the cowboy economy that Boris Yeltsin introduced to Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union, which Russians remember with the deepest dismay? And that's why Putin, with his much more centralized, much more authoritarian system, appears to appeal to so many Russians who remember what happened in the anarchic days of Yeltsin.
Yes, we do have a lot of people who actually remember what happened. Some of Yeltsin's policies were quite controversial, and I'm not the guy who's going to endorse all of them. I remember waking up at 3 in the morning just to go stay in lines for food for the day, because the shelves were totally empty. And when Yeltsin came, there were food in stores. Problem disappeared. Absolutely, right?
But if you ask Russians today whether you want to go back to the sort of crazy anarchic economic times of Yeltsin, they would say absolutely no way.
Look, no. Most of the people who remember 90s understand that, first, there's not much difference now. It's all mythology. It's all foam. It's all propaganda and television. Crime, still high. Infrastructure, deteriorating, in a lot of cases even worse than the 90s, right? Propaganda, oh yes, big time. Many new trading centers have been built. But eventually, you know, when you start talk real issues to people, this mythology about bad 90s and good Putin times, it vanishes because practically people see not many differences then. Mostly talk, mostly propaganda.
Well, talking of mostly talk, I mean, you talk very passionately about your vision for Russia. The problem is, getting back to the internal dynamics of the opposition, the anti-Putin, pro-democratic opposition, you are constantly fighting amongst yourselves. You create alliances, then you destroy them. You badmouth each other. You are full of ego and vanity. You're just not coherent as an opposition.
Thanks for the kind words. One quick return to the 90s. One thing which people realize, income inequality grew enormously under Putin, and people understand that, and it's very visible everywhere. Back to us fighting. You know, when you have so many barriers, And we don't have a baggage of success stories to begin with because we're mostly banned from elections.
So all the more reason to be united. But at the moment, I just look at it around, you know, you and other leaders, key leaders like Alex Navalny, Mikhail Kasyanov, you've tried to create this umbrella opposition movement. Last year, big, big hullabaloo, you said this is going to be a movement to take on Putin. The fact is, you're fighting like rats in a sack. Navalny and Kasyanov have fallen out. You're not sure if you're even going to stay. And apparently, there are people inside your own small movement, the Democratic Choice Movement, who've accused you, and I'm quoting Igor Drandin here, of being authoritarian. It's difficult to have one's own opinion in this party. Milov reacts badly to any criticism. You know, this is the style that you have in the opposition.
Look, you're going to pick up any trolls' comments on Facebook to actually discuss this on BBC program. I can give you more. The trolls say even worse things about
me. Why can you not unite in the opposition?
Look, let's talk serious things, and I refuse to comment the trolls' remarks, because that's not serious. Speaking seriously, we have a situation when the license, the party license to run without signature barrier in elections, is controlled by one man, Mikhail Kasyanov. He has huge problems with his image. He needs to step down from number one position in the party list, or we won't get any support at all.
So you won't work with Kasyanov?
He refuses. We're not fighting. We just said, look, we do not participate in one list with Kasyanov because of his image problems, sex tape released on TV and so. We're not fighting. We just withdrew.
That's a cheap shot. You've just mentioned a sex tape, which he says is a fraud, and which, even if it's not a fraud, why would you mention it? It just, again, comes back to this fact. There's no unity between you guys in the opposition.
I mention it because voters have seen it, and they ask questions just about what we talked with you before. Everybody knows, including us in the first place, we're under 24/7 surveillance. People ask you simple questions. Why can't you guys just simply control yourselves in the wake of the crucial elections? We have to answer something.
Do you think we
are there to discuss reforms during the campaign. We do not want to discuss Kasyanov's tapes. Let him answer these questions. I don't want to answer it for him.
It seems to me you're making some kind of political capital out of it, but you raise an interesting point. Given the pressures, the surveillance, the intimidation, the arrests, imprisonment, of course, of Navalny for a short while as well, Garry Kasparov, who's been on this programme several times, he's quit. He said he no longer feels safe in Russia. He can't live in Russia anymore. How close to concluding the same thing are you?
Yes, it is not safe to live in Russia. We began with the fact that my partner and co-author was killed last year. And moreover, 3 months after that, another important member of our coalition, Vladimir Karamurza, who was the chief representative of Khodorkovsky in Moscow, was poisoned. It's very clear that it was a criminal poisoning, most likely done by the FSB structures. So yes, it is not safe.
So will you stay or will you go?
I will. I have to stay because I have to bring these efforts to certain kind of result, and there is a perspective ahead, despite all the nasty things that you quote from Facebook.
Well, it's not just from Facebook, believe me. If we're going to talk the future, a last question. You jokingly said Putin will be around longer than Brezhnev. He could be around if he stands again for president till 2024. If he does, what will Russia look like by 2024?
First, he technically will stay longer than Brezhnev when his current term expires. So it's already almost achieved. Second, it is important to actually bring Putin to responsibility for the system that he built, and that is possible through parliamentary elections and all other political instruments that we have. Difficult, but possible. If his party loses majority in parliament this September, which is absolutely achievable, they already have less than 50% approval rating. So they will most likely lose the majority in September. Putin will have to engage in dialogue with other forces to promote
his
decisions.
Do you believe that's possible?
Absolutely.
Vladimir Milov, we have to end there. Thanks for being on Hard Talk.
Thank you.
That was an edition of Hard Talk presented by me, Stephen Sacker. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.